just for everybody that needs to know, Santa Claus has been in full action in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And Santa Claus is getting a lot of kudos. I was actually told the other night that, you know, I've set the bar for Santa Claus way too high because now they don't know who comes in behind me. And it's mainly because I give away a lot of free stuff, you know, so, you know.
You do good work. I'm gonna have to get down there and see this firsthand. But I saw some photo evidence. It looks pretty good.
You know, a lot of effort's gone into the Santa Claus. A lot of effort.
I heard.
It's hard work, man. Dude, I got to tell you, Matt, I'm glad you're on. So, you know, I guess we probably ought to think about a little bit of stuff here. We have some business before we get started, don't we? Like, you're cue asking, the intro?
Are you asking me or Kat? I think you're asking Kat.
Oh, yeah, we can cue the intro. Of course, okay. We'll cue the intro.
Cue that intro, Kat.
We're back. So what you had things in your mind, Todd? I feel like your mind was reeling and then we had to listen to the song that you were going to sing for Matt, but
turns out there's no lyrics, so he didn't know what to do. Yeah.
As you pointed out, I don't know the lyrics because there are no lyrics and I'm not good at making up lyrics. And I have been singing in public lately as Santa Claus. So that's always been a good thing, which is actually filled with irony because I've never had a problem speaking in front of people, but I am absolutely terrified to sing in front of people. No desire to ever do that.
But is there something that happens when you get the persona on that you can just, like, you're somewhere else? Is that what that is?
I am Santa Claus. Yeah. So I have no fear about singing in front of people because I'm Santa Claus.
But just to be clear, you're not going to sing for me and Kat because you're not wearing the suit right now.
No, that's right. Because today I am not Santa Claus.
Right. Well,
that, you know, I mean, here's the thing. Matt, you're a dude, and even though I'm older than you, I know that you, because you're a dude, you're going to understand this film I'm about to reference. Patton and George C. Scott.
Well, of course. Great.
Of course. So, you know, George C. Scott won the Oscar for his portrayal of George S. Patton in that film and refused to accept it. Why? Because he said he was Patton.
Patton.
So he couldn't accept an Oscar for acting because he wasn't acting. Right. That's me and Santa Claus.
That's it. I like it. You know, you are one with the character. I've listened to a lot of your guys' podcasts. You guys have a whole like side movie hustle thing that you like to do, which I love. I'm a bit of a movie aficionado. You do. We had like Twisters references and I think Violent Bad Santa or Kill Santa. There's something in there.
No, Violent Night. Violent Night. Great movie.
Great movie. You're not going to go with Miracle on 34th Street, huh? Violent Night. Okay.
You know, Miracle on 34th Street is, you know, out there. I did go to Santa. When I went to Santa school, the reality is that it was Charles W. Howard's school for Santa Claus, oldest Santa Claus school in the country, was started by the original Macy Santa. So there you go. 88th year.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
But in the term of Christmas movies, if you have not seen Red One, you should see Red One.
It's really good, actually. And it's like one that, because like my kids are teenagers now. And so it's one that they would be like, this is so cool. Like they would like it too. I mean, it's got The Rock and Chris Evans. I mean, it's just cool.
I mean, come on. It's got The Rock and Captain America. How can you go wrong?
Have you been able to get your kids to watch Die Hard, the first? Because to me, that's the original Christmas action movie. There's snow.
I think we've seen it, but it's not like a usual watch. They like Christmas Vacation. That's a good one, but it's not violent by any means. And then, of course, Elf. But yeah, they need to watch Red One because I watched that one by myself. Mm.
I have to tell you, you know, I can remember when, honest to gosh, Die Hard came out.
Oh, yeah.
Because it came out as a Christmas movie, and it was in June, July. And in the heat of the summer, you go into the cool, cold, you know, theater in the afternoon to watch a Christmas movie. It was freaking awesome.
It was awesome. I love that movie. That's my, yeah, that's my good. My wife wants to watch The Holiday and I want to watch Die Hard. So that's
The Holiday's so good.
Kind of, that pretty much sums up my life. And which one do you think we end up watching?
It's The Holiday.
The Holiday.
As you should.
Hey, dude, I got to tell you, my wife, you know what she wants to, she's really a throwback. She wants to watch all the Fred Astaire, you know, Holiday Inn and Bells of St. Mary. And I was like, eh.
Violent night.
Yeah, Violent Night. Let's watch a Violent Night instead.
Goodness.
So for those of y'all that don't know, we're joined today by Matt Dannefeld from Seedbox Solutions. And, you know, I'm very happy that you're here. Matt, y'all have had a lot of big news here lately. Last week, I know we covered, y'all had an announcement out that there was a whole management buyout that y'all have gone through now. So y'all really are ready to expand. Y'all have had a good run the last several years, but talk to us a little bit about the management buyout. And then honestly, I want to delve back into, you know, when y'all got started and what the objectives are and, you know, where, you know, kind of talk about the company, where it's been, where you're going.
Yeah. That kind of stuff. Well, first off, thanks for having me. I've listened to a lot of your shows, or your podcast rather, and they're fun. And I'm really, it's fun to be here. It's very fun to be here, yeah. Especially with Kat. I mean, Todd, you're fine. Kat's kinder.
Already established that everybody likes me.
Yeah, everybody likes Kat. I am simply the comic relief.
Yeah, well, you know, that's okay. Everyone gets
to be self-aware.
Know thy role, right?
That's it. Good to be self-aware.
Yeah, you know, kind of in the here and now, we did a 2024 was a big year for us. I was able to put together a management buyout, which basically just means we found a different partner to, you know, be able to buy back a substantial amount and majority interest in the business that I started back in 2014 that I had divested to fuel some growth back in like 18. So we've reestablished controlling interest and, you know, probably more importantly, we've got ourselves a position now where we've got a lot of, you know, dry powder. We're in a position now to really grow and try to aggressively help the industry and the customer base in terms of the things we're trying to do. So, 2025 is going to be fun. Obviously the next several years are going to be fun. And, we're excited. We're super excited. It's going to be,
man,
it's going to be good.
I got to tell you what, I think we all lose track of the years during COVID. And, you know, so periods of time, all of a sudden, you know, because you just mentioned, got started in 2014. So y'all passed 10 years this year.
We did.
And I have to be very honest with you. I had no idea that was the case. I really was thinking that y'all started like in 17, 18, somewhere in there. Yeah. But, you know, again, when we hit COVID and I mean, everybody lost a year and a half or 2 years, you know, in their concepts of stuff. So 10 years, I mean, dude, yeah. that's pretty substantial.
Yeah. I mean, it's a long, boring story that will certainly not make your listeners suffer through in its entirety, but we, you know, we greenfielded this, right? It wasn't an acquisition. It was literally employee one was me. And it was really an idea. So the first 4 years were all just really starting to learn the industry, learn the business. And I think the reason you and Kat and the IPSA came to know who we were in a more prevalent way in 17, 18, to your mm-hmm. point, was that was when we joined IPSA. We brought a box to the market on a product basis. Prior to that, it had been only in all services. So right. That was, I think, the reason, if you kind of look at our timeline, is why I think most people would recognize us in the space around 17, 18. It's been a crazy, I don't know where 10 years went, but
you know, an important aspect, particularly when we're looking at the independent seed companies, because I mean, everybody out there and, you know, and I'm not meaning to pick on people, but it was interesting for me. When I spent so many years at Syngenta and I thought I knew so much about, you know, business, I knew a lot about corporate stuff, But interestingly, you know, you get out, you get on your own, you have to start making payrolls and do stuff. And I gained a great appreciation immediately for everybody that has their own seed company. I mean, this is the same type of piece that you did too. No corporate help behind you. Y'all are stepping out on this. This is another independent business working with independent seed companies.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you said, I know you and I have talked about this in the past, over the years, is I've always felt like our company most aligned with the independent seed, you know, producers that are part of the IPSA. Yeah. And I mean that more in terms of our size, our startup, you know, being the new guy, all those kinds of things, sort of culturally and quite literally being, you know, in terms of how we came into the industry. So, you know, it's where we started, really. We started our business with the independents. I think we've tried to bring value to the independents. And it's kind of where we're focused when we look ahead as well. Doing some things that I, you know, dare I say, maybe they felt like from a packaging perspective, you know, they didn't have a lot of options, and we're just trying to present options. So, yeah, I've just always felt like it was an obvious fit, just kind of how we started and how a lot of those companies started.
Yeah, so that's interesting, because options are a big thing. I mean, clearly we've talked a lot the last several years about options, and we think about it a lot in terms of traits and genetics. But there was one player in the market, and then y'all were the second real entry into it. But I think one of the things that I'm really intrigued with about what Seedbox has done, and from a story standpoint, you have been, I think, very successful with our people from the IPSA membership and even beyond the IPSA membership for, you know, the independent seed companies. And I think part of that is because you do think like an independent, because you are. But as you recognize, you came to the market with a box in 17-18. So that puts you on everybody's radar. But Matt, y'all have kind of evolved beyond selling a box into really delivering value in a really different way to seed companies. And, you know, and part of that is, you know, I'll pull this one out, the leasing program that you do.
Yeah.
And the amount of value that it brings from capitalization. Talk to us a little bit about that. I think probably everybody that's going to listen to this is going to understand immediately the value, and you probably already talked to, but, you know, for somebody that has got seed boxes and have option, you know, and have to look at some different things, talk about the options and the service that you're delivering now with that program.
Yeah. I mean, I think for context, here's what I would say. We don't go, I think what we try to do for the independents, really for all of our customers, is we don't have a thing, sell a thing. I just don't believe that as a philosophy. And what I mean by that is listen to what they've got going on. What are their headaches? What are their pain points? Can we address that? And so when you have a thing and you sell a thing, then that means your thing's got to be very specifically aligned with whatever it is they're trying to do, as opposed to you got to be more nimble and flexible. And so over the years, you know, yeah, we're not just a box selling company, to your point. We've got services, we sell products, all the spare parts. Even if you own the other guy's boxes, we'll help support that fleet. And then to your last point, we started to see an opportunity where a lot of companies said, man, they're expensive assets. They're heavy on the balance sheet. We're seed producers. And suddenly we're waking up managing these really large, challenging packaging assets. That's not the business we want to be in. And that's not how we want to deploy our energy, our money, our talent, whatever it may be. And so the program we put together starting in 2019, 2020 was going to those companies and saying, hey, if this is for you, if you want to continue to buy boxes, we're happy to support that. But if you're interested in something more that looks different, we basically buy those assets back from the producer, and then we rent them back to them on a year-over-year basis. And it's not an equipment lease. It's not a you pay, you keep it. You know, so these companies, as their box needs can go up and down, which invariably can happen in a competitive environment, sure, they're not stuck. You know, they really rent what they need in a given crop season. They return those boxes at the end of the season, at the end of the year, and then that's it. Their commitment is essentially falls away, and then they rent what they need the subsequent year. And so they're never dealing with a surplus of boxes that they maybe bought when demand was high and they've had some, you know, headwind, and now they're sitting on a bunch of assets that they don't need. Conversely, they don't, you know, land a couple of big accounts, and that's exciting, except they didn't plan capital to buy boxes, and now they need to go out and get more, and capital's either not, you know, earmarked or not available at all because they had their CapEx budget allocated elsewhere. Now they can just rent additional boxes without any long-term implication. So it's not a solution that it necessarily meets everyone's needs, but as I said, it's what we're trying to do is say, look, this should be a menu. It's a mission critical component of the business. So it's going to be a, you know, different size fit for every company. And we just want to present options to an industry that's built on, you know, R&D and development and what's next, what's going to be new tomorrow. You know, packaging was pretty stagnant for a long time. Right. Yeah. And now I think, so we're trying to sort of bring that same innovative mindset to the packaging side of the space, which is kind of the world I come from. So,
which is really, really cool. Cause in my mind, that does, you know, a direct credit to your name, actually, CBOX Solutions, because you've got the solution aspect of it and you are looking at it. It's not just about one thing. It is a menu. It's an opportunity. Okay. Well, we can work with this way, this way, this way. If you can say, how do you see the lease versus buy market developing over time? Do you see it really leaning one way or the other? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to share it here. I'm transparent to a flaw. You know, what I would tell you is this. I think what you're going to see is in soybeans, it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I say that because managing box needs for soybeans are, generally speaking, it's a higher cost of ownership for the producers, and we do it quite well. We do it more efficiently. We're able to offer them savings. And again, with soybeans doing what they're doing, I think having sort of de-risking that segment of your business makes a lot of sense, right? You know, the other commodities, we still think there's value, and there's certainly plenty of customers that we have today that rent their boxes for corn and cotton as well. And I think what we're going to see is as we continue to roll out the rental program, what we're doing next in 25 and beyond is adding another layer of technology and what I'm going to call product monitoring that I think will take that next step as far as the value of the total program. So it's not so much like rent versus own, you know, sort of think forklift. We're trying to bring a level of value to that customer sale experience that we're going to be bringing to the market in 25 that I'm, you know, we're pretty excited about, actually.
So, and if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of move over and talk about that a little bit. I know you and I have had, you know, some side discussions about this new technology that you're talking about. Can you describe that a little bit more for the listeners? Because as we've talked about it, it just, again, sounds to me to be one of these layup no-brainer type concepts on being able to really monitor the seed that's in a box.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. So two things, I guess, I'd say, first of all, what does it do? Like, what does it actually tell you if you have it? If your product is in what we're deeming or dubbing a smart box, which is a box as everyone knows them today, but it's got this technology layer that we've custom developed. So this is an in-house custom solution that we've been working on for the last 4 years. What it's going to tell a producer is, what product is in what box? Where is it at any time in the trade, from the time it gets bagged all the way down to the farm and all points in between? It's going to tell you the environmental conditions of that box and of that seed from the day it's bagged to the day it would be emptied and planted in terms of temperature and humidity. And then it's also going to ultimately tell you when or if that box actually does get emptied. Because as we all know, you know, give or take, depending on what producer you're talking to, you know, you'll typically run out 10 boxes of seed for every, you know, 6 to 8 that actually get emptied. And so if it's soybeans, you're going to bring those back and have to deal with it. If it's corn, you have to make decisions on, are you going to carry it over? Where are you going to, how much is coming back? So this is going to be data you have, you know, forecasting data on when it's in the trade, as opposed to waiting until, you know, June, July, August, be like, oh, I guess this came back. So that's what it does. I think when we look at it from a real high level, we kind of go and look, there's a bunch of different ways to look at this, but this is what's always struck me as interesting. The industry, and again, I'm saying independents all the way up to the, you know, multinationals, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to develop the product, right? And everyone knows that. And yet, what I've always found so interesting is that last mile, I say that kind of in air quotes, that last important get it to our customer and get it in the ground, there's very little information about that last mile. And what information we have is captured on a 8.5 and 11 printed piece of paper.
Yeah.
I know more about the Domino's pizza that I ordered in real time than we know about a $10,000 or $12,000 box of corn.
Because we all love the pizza tracker. I mean, we all love the
pizza tracker. Right. Who doesn't love a good pizza tracker, right? So
yeah, exactly.
So to spend a pretty nominal amount of money to have that level of detail on where that expensive inventory is, you know, we just feel like it's a customer experience. If you look out in 3, 4, 5 years, we're hoping that people say, gosh, how did we buy this much product that is so important? And I've listened to everybody on your show talk about that it's a really, you know, it's a very personal purchase decision. You know, that I know there's a lot of inputs at the farm, but that seed is a really personal buy. So to know, you know, really intimately exactly what's going on with it and the condition it's been handled, and to have the highest level of assurance that you're going to have a high quality product upon receipt at the farm. You know, we're banking on that being an important value add beyond just it being a big plastic box that gets stuff from A to B. So anyway, that's kind of where we're driving over the next year or two.
So really and truly what we're looking at here, I mean, honest to gosh, is, I mean, in my words, I'd say seed box is really in the innovation space, that it is about innovation, because that's seems to me where you keep coming through. We're doing this, and then we're going to innovate. We're going to do this, and then we're going to do that. It's a constantly moving piece of services and solution. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I would definitively agree with it. I kind of like to break stuff. And I mean that in like a really honest way. And I think what's interesting is, and it's natural. And certainly, you know, Buckhorn is the longtime incumbent. Mm-hmm. And I think it's natural for people to say, well, you guys are the other box guys, and so ergo, your competitors. It's funny, I don't actually look at the landscape that way. In fact, we own more Buckhorn boxes than our own boxes in terms of our rental and our leasing fleet. So we're sort of in the business of how do we make the experience for the industry better, and how do we do something disruptive and innovative? So, when we think about technology, it's a little bit more about what's next, what's not. We spend more time talking about what we're not doing and what we should be doing than maybe, you know, what we are doing. And, of course, there's a delicate balance. You've got to run your business, and pay the bills, and everyone understands that. But, you know, it's an industry born of innovation and born of disruption. And so I think to sort of keep that hat on is it's kind of how we're built, how I'm built, and it's fun. So yeah, I definitely think that's what we're trying to do, is think about ways to innovate.
And that's interesting, because to hear you describe the, you know, Buckhorn relationship as less competitive, and I don't mean that as a slight either direction. I mean, here it is. Y'all have kind of evolved beyond that, not trying to be a basic plastic manufacturer and just deliver boxes. It's a needed asset, but trying to really address the issues in the in the marketplace, which I think is very cool.
Customers. We have customers that have very clearly said, listen, we've been buying from Buckhorn for a long time and we'd like to continue to do so. And how can you support us in other ways? And our response is, yeah, let's talk about that. You know, and that can come from this innovation on technology, that can come from deploying services that can drive costs out of their operation. You know, that can come from them selling us those Buckhorn assets and we'll manage them for them, which we've done and why we own so many Buckhorn boxes. So, yeah, I think from our point of view, those are the ways you create value. You know, I think, again, going back to the top, otherwise it's I got a thing, I'm trying to sell a thing that, you know, it starts to land. You know, it's not to say there's anything wrong with that, but it's limiting in terms of what you can do to help, you know.
So I gotta tell you a story. I think you know this story. I always get a tickle out. One of my favorite innovation stories of all time comes with you know, your good friend John Bertolino.
Oh, John.
And you know, now look, in all fairness, everybody knows that John Bertolino and I combined pull each other's hair out from time to time.
Okay. Well, you both have the same hairline. So
we have both have the same hairstyle, and it's both of our faults.
Fair.
But I remember years ago, and John just is this innovative idea thinker, just boom, ba boom, ba boom, all the time. Years ago, being in the plant, seeing how, you know, boxes were made, and, you know, that was when John was over at Buckhorn, and John voices idea, you know, I really think that what we ought to be doing in boxes is, you know, we could sell these as caskets to, you know, low cost places like in Africa where there are no trees to do this. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, well, that makes totally sense. It's a bit morbid, but morbid, I mean, yeah, but unbelievably good idea.
A never-ending market. I mean, yeah, a high-demand market never quits on you. So
the guy always was thinking, had an idea here and there on everything. So that
We're definitely guilty of probably coming up with some harebrained ideas too. Not to say the casket thing couldn't be, but but you know, mud on the wall is kind of fun. I mean, I think
it is.
You know, it's good stuff. And again, every once in a while, something sticks, and then you kind of, you know, test it out and run with it, and. I don't know. I think that's how I built, you know, I stumbled into this thing in 2014, into this ag space. You know, I was not in the ag space prior to this, but I think my North Star has always been, that's a Christmas reference for you, by the way.
Yeah, we're coming back to that. Don't think you're getting away with just not talking about Christmas anymore.
Right? No, I'm ready. Don't worry. I'm ready.
Okay.
No, I just think, you know, life is short. You know, you want to build things that are fun and new and innovative. And I think that's what we're trying to do. And I think, you know, and what I think is really lovely about the ag industry truly is you get a lot of folks that are supportive, you know, because you can't do it alone and you can't do it in a vacuum. And so, you know, you need customers that are willing to try new things and be willing to let the new guy in and kind of break a few eggs and hope to make a good omelet. And there's a lot of industries that don't work that way. There's just a lot of inertia. They're not willing to try. And we've found, you know, not every company, but a lot of the independents, frankly, why I think we align with them right away is they're more apt to say, that's interesting. We'll give that a look. Or, yeah, we'll try that out as a beta or whatever you want to call it. I think that's where, they've been an amazing place for us to kind of incubate some of these ideas, whether it was a brand new box that no one had seen before in 2018, or this rental model that no one had done before in 2020, or now this innovation that we're launching with technology in 2025. All three of those things incubated and are starting within the independents, not necessarily at the top heavy multinationals. And that's, to me, that's a real credit of sort of the mindset of the independent is how do we do something new and better? And, you know, I think that we're fortunate to be able to have that kind of, you know, base of customer to do that with.
Well, and I do think of that. And I mean, I've talked a lot about the independents being rooted in innovation and, you know, throwing ideas against the wall. But I mean, if we really look at it, where the independent seed companies got started, you know, back in so many of them, and I mean, we're looking at, you know, Beck's and Wiffles and Latham and all these companies started, Cornelius started generations ago based on the innovation of corn hybrids, hybridization right. of corn. So, I mean, you know, we're really rooted in innovation. So it's, you're exactly right. It's a space where CBOX fits superbly in with the independence from that perspective. So that is very cool from my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun. We're going to see how this rollout goes. And we're excited to be able to help the independent. I was listening to Ben Green at Purple Ribbon talk a little bit about that customer experience, how personal that is. And I think if we can even in just a small way help improve what that customer sales experience is for an independent. You know, packaging is sort of one of those, packaging, right? Buy a bag, buy a box. But I think we try to think of it like, how can we benefit that product value, that sales experience? Because that's everything. I mean, that's the value proposition, you know? Because if you're going to go in there and just bang away on the door at price, that's a long road to hoe, pardon the pun. So, you know, I think we're just trying to do our small part in a way and on a thing in terms of boxes that maybe for the longest time, nobody, you know, they're not terribly sexy. Nobody paid much attention to it. So.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. I told you we were going to come back to this. Oh, by the way, before we move to the next segment, Matt, any last words about Seedbox and everything? And, you know, of course, we're excited you're going to be in Indian Wells here with us in, you know, just under 2 weeks. So we're looking forward to having some fun there. Any last words on that?
No, I don't think so. I would tell you, you know, I think we're excited to be a member. I know that the independents, there's a lot of things going on. I know that there's a lot of consolidation. There's a lot of things that represent some headwinds. But, you know, we're committed to helping the independents continue to carve out value. And, you know, I guess I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do together in the next couple of years. So,
well, I do have to tell you, Catherine and I are pretty excited. As of this morning, we are knocking on the door of having our biggest conference in history in California, which is shocking.
Exhibitors or attendees or both?
Both.
Attendees. Well, exhibitors as far as sponsors, yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Full attendance package. So, yeah, awesome. You know, number of bodies that are actually there. So I mean, really excited.
I know just from the outside looking in, the lift that you guys do year in and year out for that event, let alone just the ongoing effort to keep, you know, to keep the IPSA, you know, at the highest level of value. So congrats. That's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you.
We're looking forward to being there.
We were very nervous about this year. Okay, here's the new thing. Never done this before. Oh, Catherine's not prepared for this.
Oh, boy.
So it's a total shocker.
I'm ready.
We're going to play either or Christmas edition.
Okay.
Hold on. I'm ready.
Okay. Perfect. Jesus, I feel so underdressed. I need the beard and everything. I feel like I need to just share one of my Santa pictures at this
point. This is a fake okay, for either radio or Christmas edition
with Matt Dannefeldt. Here we go.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to give you two choices, then you have to pick one of the two.
So are you asking Matt and then you're going to ask me, or are we both answering the same question?
I think you're both answering the same questions.
But okay. Kat has to go first, right?
That's
no,
fine.
Matt has to go first.
Okay, fine.
Okay, Kat goes first. Ladies first. Okay. Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. And we already have heard some of the things, but, you know, because you're now going to have a choice, either or.
Yeah.
There could be different choices. All right. So we'll start out with an easy one. Christmas cookie, gingerbread or sugar?
Gingerbread.
Sugar.
Did you just take the opposite side?
No.
Just for reason.
Okay. No, I already had it. I promise. I'll be gentle.
Okay. Christmas flower, chrysanthemum or poinsettia?
Chrysanthemum.
Poinsettia.
I'm seeing a trend. Okay. All right. Mrs. Claus, Goldie Hawn or Helen Mirren?
Goldie Hawn.
Goldie Hawn. Hey, see?
Here we go.
Personally, I like Helen Mirren. There's just something about her as she's gotten older that I'm thinking, Yeah, okay.
I didn't want to be rude. I was going to do Goldie Hawn pre-lip injection, but I didn't think that was appropriate, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. She was kind of shocking in Christmas Chronicles, too, when I saw her, or at the end of Christmas
Chronicles. I'm going to go Goldie Hawn pre-2010. Can we do
okay,
that?
Okay, I'll go with that.
Okay.
Okay, Santa Claus, Kurt Russell, or J.K. Simmons?
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. He's the best.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. You know, he is so understated. I just wish he'd fix his hat. Did not like his hat in Red One. Okay.
Everything that guy touches is gold. Juno. I mean, everything he touches is gold.
I mean, yeah.
Man, do you remember the very first thing he came out in?
I mean, he's got a pretty long resume. No, probably not.
He played a white supremacist prisoner in the HBO series Oz. That was one of his very first things.
Yeah.
It was a really dark and dirty thing, and he was a bad dude.
He's one of those character actors that can go, he's got so much range. I love that guy.
Oh, I got to tell you what, at Whiplash, he was freaking amazing.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah, it really was. Really was. Okay. All right. Christmas dinner, turkey or ham?
Okay. So if we're using my mom's ham recipe, then ham. But I also really like turkey.
Ham. Period. Jeez. Hard stop.
Okay. Christmas dinner, if it's turkey, fried or smoked?
Smoked. I've never had a fried turkey, but I don't really eat a bunch of fried food.
Same. Turkey fried is not really like fried food.
My wife's going to love this podcast because she's a vegetarian. So,
okay. Well, I don't have any vegetarian idea besides saying, okay.
Or broccoli, go.
Well, I was about to say Christmas vegetable, green beans, casserole, or asparagus.
Yeah, green bean casserole for me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. All right. Final question on either or. And this is the one that, you know, I thought we probably had wired.
Yeah.
But I'm going to change it up. Favorite Christmas movie? Okay. Elf. Oh. Elf or Violent Night?
Elf.
Yeah, Elf, if those are my choices. I mean, can I lob in my own? I'm going to go in. You know what? This is for Lisa. Holiday. Oh, that's for you, honey.
Oh, how sweet.
Okay, yeah. All right, so next one is Elf or Home Alone 2, Lost in New York?
Elf.
Home Alone 1, you had a chance. But Home Alone 2, nah.
Okay. Elf or Home Alone 1?
Elf.
I'll go Home Alone just for the
Okay, finally.
Yeah, just for the nostalgia.
You know, I can live with Elf. You know, Buddy says my favorite phrase when I'm talking to kids is Santa Claus. Remember, the best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
There
you go.
Yeah. That's how you should close this out. Maybe belt out a few.
Not in Santa Claus suit. Can't do it.
Fine. Fair.
All right. Matt, man, thank you for spending some time with us today. Look forward to seeing you here in a couple of weeks. And, of course, Merry Christmas to you. And Merry Christmas to every one of our listeners as well. And Catherine.
Thanks for having me. You guys are amazing. And congrats on an amazing year. And Merry Christmas to you guys. And we'll see you in Palm Springs in 2025.
That'd be awesome. Catherine, you got the final words.
Merry Christmas.
I thought it was like, listen, subscribe, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yes. I always forget about that. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share to bring other people into our Stock Talk community. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thanks, y'all. Thanks.